Chapter 18, Science Fair, March 18th, Earth. Dad's been back from the hospital for a while, and life seems to be getting back to normal. Life has been a blur for the past 2 months, and I can't believe the science fair is already here. Mom and Dad drove all the guys over, and Sean is coming with her parents. Dr. Price will be arriving directly from work, but will be a little late. Nancy and Veronica are missing, of course. Nancy had a tournament, and Veronica's precious social status would be in ruins if she ever attended something like this. Abdo and his mom are going to be here, though. His excitement about his hand keeps growing every day. The news clip about our project made us minor celebrities, and we saw the impact as soon as we arrived. The fair is being held in the convention center. It isn't large enough to require the main show floor space, but there are over 100 tables, which makes it an impressive sight. Displays are somewhat arranged by topics like geology, physics, chemistry, biology, and so forth. The chemistry booths are relegated to their own private room, presumably due to lessons learned from previous fairs. There is, however, another sorting technique employed. The cool-sounding demonstrations are positioned near the central podium. The volcanoes, styrofoam solar systems, and goldfish breeding experiments are in the back.
Our booth is right up front with the big league. The girl next to us had built a fully functional laser that used lime green jello as lasing material. The boy next to us designed and built a computer using discrete logic chips. It is running a simple program connected to the internet, and we can't even figure out what the kid two booths down is showing. We stood in front of that kid's booth and flipped through the book lying on the table. It was titled, Expression of Inhibited Characteristics of the Avian Genome with Adaptive Enhancement. Over 200 pages long, and written by an R. Latouche. The posters pinned to the curtain behind the table were no help either. They looked like genetic expressions and microscopic images of cells. I joked that while R. Latouche might do impressive work, he had no showmanship at all. Sean said that she once audited the microbiology course of two professors at UC named Latouche. Dr. Francois Latouche is a microbiologist. His wife, Dr. Ines Latouche, is a geneticist. I said, of course you did. What else would an 11-year-old do? She punched me and said, I was 10 at the time. I said, well, at least we know whose mommy and daddy helped them with their science project. And we all laughed. We might not have done anything as world-changing as our neighbors, but our booth looked awesome. Malik had hung oversized schematics of both designs behind our table, and they looked like something out of Iron Man. Abdo, of course, was proudly standing in front, shaking hands and picking a variety of objects up from the table with his new hand. We had a bigger crowd even than the laser girl. The judges were starting to come down our aisle when Ethan grabbed me in a panic. I tried to get him to calm down until after we spoke to the judges, but he was too excited.
Dude, I just talked with Laser Girl, he whispered.
I laughed. Well, I'm very proud of you, Ethan. Did you get her number?
No, but I got her name, he said.
I had to laugh because his eyes were so filled with excitement. I said, well, that's a start, man.
No, you moron. Her name is Aurelia, and she's 13 years old, he hissed.
I said, well, then ask her out. The judges were getting close, and I had to prepare. Ethan grabbed my arm and said,
Aurelia could be combined with another name to make either Elisa or Tara.
That stopped me. Could we have found Elisa? She had mentioned being at the science fair.
This could be huge, but I couldn't deal with it right now. The judges were at Computer Guy's booth.
I quickly helped Tyler straighten up the objects Abdo kept squeezing and heard an announcement over the PA system.
Would Marco Pavlovich please come to room 1477B?
Tyler laughed and said, that poor guy's name is worse than yours. I grinned and said, hey, it isn't that bad. Then the PA shouted,
would Marcus Panapalovich come to room 1477B immediately?
Everyone was chuckling at how they were butchering that poor guy's name and feeling sorry for him. There was an unmistakable twinge of panic in the announcer's voice. I pushed it out of my mind, however, as I reached out to shake the judge's hand. A high-pitched girl's voice shrieked over the loudspeakers,
Mark Panagopoulos! Chantel Jackson! Hurry!
Sean and I glanced at each other and I said, sorry, that's us, to the judges as we ran toward the door with our parents chasing behind. Dr. Price was just arriving as we raced past and joined in the chase. We had no idea what we had done, but that girl sounded desperate. The first security guard, we asked for directions, left us more confused than before we asked. The second shouted, "Follow me!" and started running as soon as she heard the room number. Room 1447B was midway down a long hallway, which was empty except for a large, overturned dog crate and two people at the far end. One of the people was a large, nervous-looking security guard, and the other was a kid curled up in a ball, rocking back and forth on the floor. We arrived at room 1447B and paused. We overheard snippets of several angry people having a heated argument inside.
"You have no right to remove our daughter from this fair."
"We have every right to remove her and that abomination. We were never informed she intended to bring that thing in here."
"Not informed. She submitted that paper 3 weeks ago. It is not your fault that you didn't read it."
"That paper was not written by a child."
"Are you implying that we rewrote that for her simply because you can't understand it?"
"Yes, that is what I'm saying." At that moment, the door opened and a highly agitated woman stormed out. She glared at the small crowd outside as if to yell at us, but froze for a moment before saying,
"What are you doing here, Randall?"
Sean's dad replied, "My daughter was summoned over the loudspeaker, Innes. What is going on?" Innes rolled her eyes and explained,
"Those stupid imbeciles will not let my daughter into the hall with her project. They say that she could not have done this herself and that it was our work. It is all a lie. We did not help her any more than we help our graduate students. It is just that these so-called judges cannot understand basic scientific writing."
"Then their clumsy henchmen dragged Raquel's project up here and dropped it. Now my poor daughter is heartbroken. She has spent years researching and many months preparing for this so-called science fair." I was going to point out that imbeciles are stupid by definition, but wisely decided against it. The woman was nodding down the hall toward the sobbing girl curled up at the end.
"But why are you here, Randall?" asked the woman.
"Yes, why are we here, Randall?" asked Chantel's mom with a raised eyebrow.
I don't know," stuttered Sean's dad, "but let me make some introductions. This is Dr. Innes Latouche. She is a professor of genetics at the university. I imagine that one of those loud voices inside is her husband, Dr. Gerard Latouche, a microbiology professor at UC. This is my wife, Diane. We are Chantel's parents. These are Mark's parents, and I'm not sure who this is."
Dr. Jackson extended his arm toward Dr. Price. He said, "I am Dr. Randall Jackson, professor of electrical engineering at UC. And you are?" Dr. Price answered, "I am Dr. Elizabeth Price. I am a pediatrician at Children's Hospital and a friend of the Panagopoulos family. I'm pleased to meet you, but I'm afraid I don't know why we're here." Dr. Latouche turned to Sean and me and said,
"Ooh, you must be Raquel's friends. You must come with me to see her. You are the reason she is here today. She is normally timid, but was excited to show you her project. I am so happy to meet you. Come, come."
Sean and I looked at each other in confusion, but we followed Dr. Latouche as she hurried down the hall. We avoided the pale-faced security guard, sidestepped the overturned cage, and stopped beside the hysterical girl huddled on the floor. Dr. Latouche knelt down, placed her hand on her daughter's back, and softly said,
"Mon chéri, your friends are here."
The girl recoiled from her mother's touch, but slowly looked up at me. We stared into each other's eyes for several seconds before she unexpectedly leaped up and threw her arms around me in a bear hug.
"Mark, Mark, Mark, thank you. You only help," she sobbed.
I had no idea what was happening, and neither did anyone else.
"Mon Dieu," exclaimed Dr. Latouche. "I have never seen Raquel do this before. She does not like to be touched. How do you know my daughter?"
I was about to say that I had no idea, but Raquel released her hug, grabbed my hand and said, "I'll go." Then she looked at Sean and asked, "Chantel?" Sean nodded and Raquel grabbed her hand as well before repeating, "I'll go, loud, too loud." Dr. Latouche motioned for the others to follow, explaining that her daughter did not like crowds, loud noise, or bright lights. Raquel glared at the nervous guard and repeated, "I'll go, now." It was clear that the guard did not want to be there, but was determined not to leave his post. Dr. Latouche pointed at him and insisted, "You move down there now." The anxious guard interpreted these as new orders and happily retreated to a safer distance down the long hallway. The three of us were awkwardly standing, holding hands by ourselves at the end of the hall when we heard a massive crash inside the room next to us. Sean and I jumped, but this nervous, hysterical girl held on, looked at me, and said,
"Mark, Stavius, only one can help."
I was too busy standing there with my mouth agape to say anything, but Sean said, "Elisa, is that you?" Raquel dropped my hand and gave Sean a quick and awkward hug. She cried, "Cage dropped. Out. In room. Scared. Very scared. Too loud. Too loud. Too loud. New place. Not like. Scared." Raquel let go of Sean and crouched on the floor, holding her head again for a moment before pointing toward the door and uttering, "Mark C. Stavius only help." I did not want to look into that room, but didn't really have a choice. I tried to pretend that I really was Stavius and summoned all my courage to peer into the narrow window on the door. The room was dark, so I pressed my eye against the window and cupped my hands around my face to block out the hallway light. Something was moving in there, but it was difficult to see what it was. I thought I saw something slender raise up, sway, and disappear, and my heart sank. Maybe this crazy girl had brought a cobra to the science fair. I was just about to give up and try to get her to explain what was in there and why she thought I could help when something slammed against the other side of the door. I screamed as I jumped back and fled, but not before I saw its large, round eye and enough of its head to know what was inside. I caught my breath and waved off the guard who suspected he should probably come down to assist, although that was the very last thing he wanted to do. He stepped back with palpable relief. I turned to Raquel and said, "Tell me the truth, Raquel. Is that a chicken in there?" Sean gasped, but Raquel nodded and said, "Very scared, very confused, too loud, not smart, but strong feelings, very scared." Then she smiled and added, "Stavius help, Stavius dragon hunter." Sean joked, "Looks like you have another customer, Stavius. Just don't cut its head off this time." Raquel looked terrified, and I groaned, "It was an accident. Can't you just let it slide after all we've been through?" Sean chuckled, "Sorry, couldn't resist. So, what are you going to do?" I thought for a minute and answered, "We need some ripe fruit and a large, heavy sheet or cloth." Sean grinned and saluted at me before running off laughing. "Yes, sir!" She returned a minute later, having sent the guard off in search of lunches. Sean said, "Raquel, it is so nice to meet you finally, but why is there a dragon in that room?" Raquel was feeling calmer with her friends here and was speaking a bit clearer. She explained, "People not let juice in. Too loud. Juice scared and excited. Cage fall and juice get out. Juice fly here and trapped in room." I said, "I think Sean wants to know why there's a dragon on Earth. But wait, you named him Juice? The big guy is going to be pissed to have a little chicken sharing his name." Sean quickly said, "He'll be fine with it," after we explained that the first dragon to ever exist on Earth was named after him. "But Mark is right, Raquel. Why is there a dragon here on Earth?" Raquel grinned and transformed into an animated personality. She said, "Juice is my project to express inhibited avian genome characteristics with select adaptive enhancements. I compared mapped genomes of 7 avian species with those of 4 species of lizards. I then overlaid similarities and differences to determine specific trait causals. Then I deduced the inhibited nucleotides which correspond to the genetic traits I wished to express. I applied this knowledge to adjust the genetic makeup of freshly fertilized chicken eggs. My paper downstairs explains everything." Sean and I couldn't believe that this was the same girl who was stuttering out single-word sentences a minute ago. "So you're suggesting that you gene-sliced a chicken embryo to turn it into a dragon, I guessed. Raquel glared and insisted, "No, no gene cutting, too dangerous." Then her face softened and she clarified, "I simply inhibited and expressed nucleotides already existing in the chicken's DNA." Sean tried to interpret this and said, "Birds are supposed to be the distant descendants of dinosaurs. I think that Raquel managed to unlock some of those prehistoric dinosaur traits to combine a modern-day chicken with a dinosaur and create a chicken dragon or a chicken." Raquel's smile broadened. "Knew you understand better than stupid officials. Not quite so simple, but mostly correct. I also expressed 2 other suppressed genes, which I was surprised to find in the avian genome. One impacted long-term memory capacity. Chickens are not highly intelligent, but they have exceptionally long memories." I asked, "And what does the other gene do?" Raquel stared at me and said, "Chicken telepathic. Stavius best at talking to dragons. Mark calm Juice down. Juice not talk, but share much feeling." Great. Raquel expected me to go in and telepathically soothe a scared dragon who couldn't form language. Stavius is the telepath, not Mark. and neither of us are empaths. I never seem to know what people are feeling, although I sure wish I did. It would keep me out of a lot of embarrassing situations. Dr. Price and the guard were back with a banana, an apple, and a container of cantaloupe. They also had a black drape stolen from around one of the booth tables. I took the banana and the melon, but returned the apple, explaining that it wasn't fragrant enough. I instructed them to cover the crate as I put my hands on the doorknob.
"Wait, he can't go in there," exclaimed the guard.
Dr. Price calmly answered, "Of course he can. Mark has extensive experience doing this. He isn't in any danger." I silently thanked Dr. Price for supporting me, even though she had no idea what was going on. I agreed, "Yeah, I used to do this all the time." The guard asked in disbelief, "You've worked with these things before?" Sean laughed, "Yeah, we both have. You should see the big ones we have back home. But you'd both better leave. These things can smell fear and stale salami." That was enough for the guard, who backed down the hall, sniffing himself. "Thanks, Dr. Price. You'd better go, too," said Sean.
"Are you sure you're okay?" asked Dr. Price.
"Yep, but you really need to go," I affirmed as I carefully opened the door. The room was dark, and it took a moment for my eyes to adjust after I closed the door. It was a windowless room illuminated by an exit sign, some dim emergency lighting, and the hallway light shining through the small window in the door. The place was littered with chairs and tables haphazardly piled throughout. It reminded me of my closet after Mom yells at me to clean my room, but before she tells me to also straighten my closet. I guessed that somebody was in a hurry to clean up after another event and just crammed everything in here before going home.
I hadn't seen any dragons yet, but heard something clatter to the floor and spun around to witness a small chicken standing 15 feet away. It was less than 4 feet tall, but I was filled with fear. This kind of surprised me because Stavius would have considered this guy as nothing more than a pesky rodent on Mirth. Of course, I wasn't Stavius, and this wasn't Mirth. Still, I shouldn't be as frightened as this. I kept trying to explain to myself why this wasn't scary, but my fear kept intensifying, and I was also starting to feel hungry. This was really strange because it wasn't time for lunch, but I couldn't stop thinking about the cantaloupe I was carrying instead of the chicken across the room. The thought of melons and chickens reminded me of when the chicken in Mrs. Marlin's garden got the melon stuck on his beak, and I involuntarily chuckled. The chicken immediately squawked and flew to the far corner of the room to precariously settle on a stack of chairs. I was startled, but no longer afraid, and instantly forgot about being famished. Those feelings began to return as the small dragon eyed me again, and I understood what was happening. I was sensing the chicken's feelings. I opened the cantaloupe container, closed my eyes, and took a deep sniff. I tried to fill my mind with feelings of security, love, and delicious food. I wasn't sure how to project my feelings, but it seemed to be working. The dragon had hopped off the chairs and was swaying toward me with his head suspiciously bobbing right and left. I placed the open container in front of me and began to talk to the dragon in a soothing voice as though I were coaxing a young, shy puppy or kitten to come over and play. I didn't think Juice understood what I was saying, but he was now feeling more suspicion and hunger than fear. 2 feet away, he stopped and cooed at me a few times. Then he cocked his head to get a good look at the fruit in front of me before rapidly darting forward to grab a piece. 3 pieces later, Mini Juice, as I decided to call him, was standing so close that I dared to reach out and touch him. He stopped eating to stare at me for a moment before returning his attention to the rapidly emptying cantaloupe container. I began stroking the downy feathers on his leathery back, and he shuffled closer. He hopped onto my lap when he finished and nuzzled my head with his long neck. I first thought he was loving, but I chuckled again when I began thinking about bananas. I pulled out the banana and felt a rush of anticipation as I peeled it. I laughed as I fed bites to him while he sat on my lap. There was no sense of fear from either of us in the room. Raquel was peering through the window, and I smiled at her. I stood up and carried Mini Juice to the door when he was finished eating. The little dragon saw Raquel and immediately pooped all down my shirt and pants and even my shoes. I had no idea that chickens could make such a stinky mess, and immediately began cursing at him. I stopped soon after when I felt his warm glow of satisfaction and enjoyment. Mini Juice might not be able to speak, but it was clear that he understood potty humor. The chirps and squeaks he was making were definitely him laughing at me. I couldn't stay mad, and softly explained that we were going to take him home as I stroked his long, serpentine neck.
He clearly understood what was about to happen, and I had to hold him tight to keep him from charging the door. I asked the girls to ready the cage and to open the door. Seconds later, Minnie Juice was safely in his covered cage, sated and cooing as if preparing to go to sleep.
Raquel sat next to the crate while Sean and I went down the hall to inform the still-arguing adults that the situation was under control. I asked the guard to direct me to a bathroom so I could clean myself up and to fetch a cart to carry the cage. Nearly everyone was gone by the time I returned. The dragon poop was washed off, but I still reeked and my clothes were wet. I don't think that stink will ever come off, and my sister says she'll puke if she has to sit in the back seat with me. Dr. Price offered to drive me with her and Tyler. My parents silently mouthed thank you to her before informing me that we will be having a family conversation later. Dr. Price whispered to Sean and me,
"Nice way to keep a low profile from the agents of Avalon."
Sean shook her head and agreed.
"And what is with you and Chiggins?